You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Green in the backfield. They'll hand it to him, and he scores the touchdown. Just like last week in Montreal, the Cats strike quick. First and goal, Masoli. Pass it to Green, and he will plow his way in. Touchdown, Hamilton. Masoli with a deep drop, back pedals, now goes end zone, and it is caught! Brandon Banks with a sensational catch, and the touchdown. What a catch by Brandon Banks.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, I love you, buddy. We're friends. We've been doing this show now, going on 4 years. I love everything about you.
But
you took to Twitter this week and were just firing off the hot takes. We disagreed about a lot of things, which for some reason recently, you and I have just been not on the same page when it comes to a lot of stuff. It's fine. It doesn't harm our relationship in any way. You're talking about Nine Inch Nails' version of Hurt being better than Johnny Cash's. That's neither here nor there. Music's music. You like what you like. That's fine. But, man, you sent out a tweet a couple days ago. Kind of got my dander up. You said right. Comic book movies suck. You said they're terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. People said that when you and I meet for the first time in November, we're going to fist fight, and I got my fist up now, dude. What? Come on. Terrible?
Come enough on. Enough already with the comic book movies. I mean, I know what it is. You know, they make a ton of money, and that's why they put them out at a – it just makes me nauseous how many comic book movies are coming out. And they're not all terrible, okay? I was trying to get a little rise. Sometimes it's
out of me, the comic book guy, the guy who goes on Three Down Nation and compares CFL personalities to comic book characters and sci-fis and superheroes and wrestlers. Mm-hmm. You do a podcast with the guy, the comic book guy of the CFL world.
Yes.
And you're sitting here putting out hot takes like they're terrible.
Well, they're not that great, Josh. So,
dude, Dark Knight, Spider-Man 2, X2, Batman Begins, Blade, come on.
Okay. The Batman movies I enjoyed, the newer ones. Who were they directed by?
Christopher Nolan. Oh my God! How are we going to go with you?
Yeah.
How are we friends?
Yes. They were good. I will admit that. Even though I haven't seen the third one, I don't know what that's about. If that's any good with Bane, but the first two were really good. But other than that, I mean, I watched. You know, I'm the biggest Transformers guy of all time, and those movies are not very good. I guess you could contribute that to Michael Bay. Because he's the director and all he does is explosions and all this stuff. But other than that, I'm not into. I don't care. I don't care about comic books, okay? I care about movies with real stories. Stories, Josh, not just explosions and cheesy one-liners, okay? I don't give a crap about Iron Man. I don't give a crap about Spider-Man. I don't give a crap about the X-Men, okay? Just give me a real movie. I'm old-fashioned, okay? Give me a real movie with real plot. You know, real plots. Is that the word plot? You know? Come on.
I'm going to plot you in the throat with my fist in a second. Okay, so, look. If you don't like comic book movies, that's fine. I have friends who don't like comic book movies. I have someone who says they've never seen a comic book movie, including Batman movies. To me, that's crazy. I understand that I go to the movies way more than the average human being. But my umbrage isn't with you not liking comic book movies. That's fine. It's calling them terrible because to me, terrible movies are like, have you seen an Adam Sandler movie over the past 15 years? Have you seen those awful like parody movies like Epic Movie and Disaster? Like those are terrible movies. Comic book movies, even at their worst, they're entertaining, they're well made, they're competently made, they're kind of fun. Are they cinema at its highest form? No. In some cases, I will disagree. I think The Dark Knight is one of the best films, period,
Yeah.
Of the past.
I agree. I love that movie. I love that movie. Okay.
Spider-Man 2.
That was an exception to the rule.
But Spider-Man 2 was one of the. I'm sure you've seen it. I hope you've seen it. Spider-Man, Doctor Octopus.
Spider-Man 2. Which one though? There's so many Spider-Man.
Yeah, I know they've rebooted Spider-Man a million times. The original trilogy with Tobey Maguire, where he fights Doctor Octopus. It's fantastic. Okay. Batman Begins. You said you liked the Bat movies. Like they're good. They're good films. But like. I just terrible. Come on, man. They're not terrible.
That was, maybe that's the wrong word.
There
for you.
Go.
Not my cup of tea. All right. I never liked any of the Spider-Man movies either. I thought they were.
Oh my god.
Trash bin.
So what movies do you watch then?
The DVD. The one with Macho Man.
Yeah. Okay. Bonesaw's ready.
Yeah,
it's great. It's fantastic.
Nothing against Macho Man. I'm just saying it wasn't a good movie.
What do you watch? What movies do you watch then? I'm very curious now.
I don't really watch a ton of movies. I'm a single dude. All right, I live by myself. I get so distracted with my damn phone. I can't even focus on the movie anymore. Like I'm looking at Twitter. I'm looking at this, and I just can't pay attention anymore. The last movie that I watched that I really thoroughly enjoyed was War Dogs with Jonah Hill and
good god, and Miles Teller.
Yeah. You didn't like that?
I don't like Miles Teller. Miles Teller is like cinema poor. I would rather watch paint dry than watch that dude try to act.
Did you see that movie?
Is that the one where they sell weapons to like
Yeah,
I think I saw that movie. I don't remember a damn thing about it. Was it good? I don't remember anything about it.
It was really good. Really good.
Was it funny?
Story. Yeah, it was funny at times, yeah. Funny / serious.
Okay. You like the Rocky movies, right?
Yeah.
Have you seen Creed?
No.
Okay, see Creed. If you come back, go find it, if you got to rent it, whatever. If you have it, I own it. If you haven't seen it, by the time I head out there in November, you and I are going to sit down, we're going to watch that movie together, okay? After that, you say, if you watch that film and go, this sucked. It's not a comic book movie. It's a Rocky movie. Everyone loves Rocky movies. Boxing. Combat sports. Everyone loves that, right? If you sit down and say that movie sucks, then we will fist fight. If you sit there and go, because to me, it's one of the best movies of the last 5 years.
You know I'm going to say it sucks
just to be a dick,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, I'll tell you my honest opinion. We watch it. I'll probably watch it. I'll give a Siskel and Ebert honest opinion. I'm dating myself there with that reference, but
aren't they both dead?
Yes.
Okay, this took. You know what? Let's get off the movies because this just took a this took a deep turn down the dark path. Let's talk some football, okay? We're not going to agree about the movie thing, but we can't agree about football stuff because we're both Ticats fans. We're both happy when they win. We're both bummed when they lose. And now we got to talk about, unfortunately, a loss. We took last week off because so did the Ticats. They were on a bye week. So the last time the Ticats took the field. Dropped a really close one, 29-23, to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Mike, I think we can all agree, everyone listening, you and I talking, it wasn't a perfect game, and the good guys coming out on the losing end kind of sucked. But it was still kind of a fun game to watch, you know? Like, it was close. There was – the Ticats made this attempt at a big comeback late, and I feel like it was an entertaining game. Like, it sucks that our team lost, but I wasn't bored watching the game. And I think at the end of it all – wins and losses, it sucks when your team loses, but at least we were entertained throughout the 3 hours and change that game was on television. What do you think? Were you at least entertained by the game between the Bombers and the Ticats?
Yeah, it was a very interesting game. I think that overall in the CFL, the games are starting to get more interesting. The sport starting to get more entertaining. Like the games this weekend were pretty good. I think the level of play is starting to take a step up. Which is really exciting to me because we're getting to the halfway point of the season, and I'm kind of jumping off track here, but it's always too bad when I feel like the CFL they have an opportunity in the summer to show people that don't normally watch, hey, check out this product, and it's usually like the worst football of the season in the summer because the teams aren't in they haven't clicked yet totally. And then when the NFL comes on, then the best football of the CFL season comes, on the field. But I digress. It was a very good and entertaining game. You look at the stats here, it's very tight yards-wise, possession time. it's unfortunate that the Ticats lost. It was another winnable game, but you're right. Overall, I enjoyed watching this game very much.
Well, when we broke down the game the week before, we talked about how this was going to be an incredibly close matchup. These were two teams very evenly matched. I was a guest on the Canadian Football Countdown podcast, and I talked on there about the game and said, look, Winnipeg's at home, so I give them a slight edge based on, because I think both teams' offenses kind of, maybe the Ticats have a little bit better of an offense than Winnipeg does. Winnipeg's defense is really good. I think Hamilton's defense can be really good. I think everything we expected this game, close, tight, not back and forth, which is what I was expecting, but it was the type of game where you're sitting down and at no point did you really think, like, I tweeted out that it was over in like the third quarter because Ticats were playing like garbage, but then they make this comeback. So it's like, it's the type of game that kind of gets you, yeah, you're bummed your team loses, but you're like, you know what? Overall, we got a good game played between two evenly matched teams. If these two teams met 10 times, they probably split 5-5, right? So I can't be too mad about the game itself, but there are some things we can get mad at. We got to talk about some of like the main stories about this. And man, it just seems like when it comes to Ticats losses, there's two things we talk about, no? Turnovers and penalties, and the Ticats did both of those way too often in this game. Let's talk about turnovers first, if you don't mind. Game starts well. Ticats opening drive down the field. They look great. Cap it with a touchdown. And then the offense just turned to crap, if you don't mind me saying. Next seven drives, they go fumble, punt, punt, fumble, safety, punt, punt. Alex Green's fumble, which was the first of the two, led directly into a Bombers touchdown. Turnovers, inconsistency, this drought in the middle of the game. Why is this team so prone to turnovers at the wrong time, and why are they so incapable of being consistent, man?
Oh, I wish I had the answer to that, Josh. I wish the team had the answer to that. They have some things to work on. This team, I truly believe that this is a very good football team, and I truly believe that we can bounce back and make a playoff push and maybe go deep into the playoffs. But they have to fix these. They had two fumbles in this game, one turnover on downs. Mazzoli fumbled again. You mentioned the Green fumble. Mazzoli seems to fumble the ball when, like, he just shouldn't. It's like he's not even touched, really. He just kind of pops out in the bad situations. That's one thing he needs to improve on. And, like, I know we haven't got to the penalties yet, but, man, those penalties are just – they're killing us. It's double digits every game, over 100 yards, it seems, every game. So those need to be cleaned up in the worst way.
Oh, I think the cops are coming to arrest you for your terrible take on comic book movies.
if that's the thing they're coming to arrest you for, I think I'll be lucky, you know?
Speaking of Mazzoli, though, like, he ran the ball in this one. He tucked it. But, like, yeah, the fumble he had, it was kind of like it was like a delayed run for the quarterback. And then all of a sudden, it's just like the ball's on the ground. And it's like, I don't even know if a replay really even showed, like, how the hell that happened. But it's like, other than that, like, you talk about Mazzoli's game, and he pretty efficient, almost, 63% passing, didn't throw an interception for the first time in a game all season, 80 yards rushing. Like, they come out of this with the win, and fumble included. They drive to at the end of the game and win this game. People are probably talking about Jeremiah Mazzoli a little bit different. I took some heat on Twitter, or at least I gave some back and forth. People kind of blaming Mazzoli for the loss. We'll talk about that in a bit because we're still talking about turnovers and stuff here. But yeah, the penalties, like just 9 flags for 89 yards in the first half. We had two, I think, that led to scoring drives for Winnipeg. Like, and then you see the second half, and it's 4 flags for 35 yards. So they cleaned it up in the second half. But man, they got behind by so much in the first half, kind of made that massive comeback that they nearly completed necessary. But like you say, like every week, it just seems like penalties haunt this team.
Yeah, 2 procedure penalties on that last drive, too.
Oh, that was
2 in a row. It wasn't Avery Jordan was one of them. It wasn't both of them, was it?
I don't think so, but let me check just to make sure. Don't want to give him too much heat or give him. No, it was Gerard and Jordan were the two. So, no, it wasn't Avery Jordan.
I was going to say that would have been terrible. But, yeah, I mean, we get that huge play, like, early in that drive, and you're thinking, hey, we got some time here, and then it just falls apart again. That's another – they need to be able to perform in clutch situations, okay? We have a chance to win. We've had a couple chances to win on last drives in a couple games so far this year, and we just haven't been able to pull it out. And I know everyone wants to blame Mazzoli, but it's not all on Mazzoli. He hasn't been performing his best on those last drives. But, you know, on two of those, I remember two of those last drives, including this game, he had a pass that was a huge play on both those drives, one to Saunders and then one in this game. I forget who it was too. But those two procedure penalties were just killer. I mean, we're working, we're first and 10, we're first and 15, and then we're first and 20. It's just, you can't be doing that.
Well, here's Hamilton's last drive, and I broke this down on Twitter when people were blaming Jeremiah Mazzoli for the loss, and I did another hashtag Jeremiah's fault and had a little fun with it, but first play of that drive, he throws a deep ball to Chris Williams, and TSN called Williams out for giving up on the play, and when you watch the replay, it was like, he starts jogging, and it's like, it's nowhere near him, but it's like, he kind of quit on the play. Very next play, procedure call. Play after that, second and long, they do a draw play to Alec Green, pick up, I think, 7 or 8 yards. I don't necessarily agree with the play, but I can see, okay, maybe we catch them napping, pick up a big gain on the ground, because the running game worked-ish throughout the game. Like, Mazzoli had pretty decent running numbers. Green had pretty decent running numbers. So it's like, I could see where maybe you think, you know, the defense pinning their ears back, you catch him napping with a screen pass, or you catch him napping with a draw play. Next play, procedure call, then he's sacked on third and long. So, look, you want to blame Mazzoli for the sack? Okay. But out of the five quote-unquote plays that happened, he's the problem with one of them. The other four are completely other people, but yet it's him who gets the L in the the knock in the loss column, and his people on Twitter going, he can't perform in the clutch. What more could he have possibly done, with the exception of not taking a sack on third and long? He can't make Chris Williams not give up on a play. He can't make those procedure calls not happen. He didn't run the ball on second. Like, how is this his fault?
Well, in my opinion, it's not his fault. I mean, it's a team game, right? It's so cliche, but it is. Like, you can't just blame Mazzoli. He had a pretty good game. I mean, he played his heart out of this game. He did everything he could. He had decent passing numbers. He led the team in rushing. He had numerous huge plays running the ball and passing the ball. I mean, he's not the problem, people. I mean, I'm starting to question all these players we lost on this offensive line that we just gave away. And now Mazzoli's been under pressure for the last two games or so. It's like, you know, it's hard for him to do anything if he doesn't have any time back there. And I'm not saying it's on every play, but it seems like that he's getting a lot more pressure than he used to.
Yeah, when it comes to, like, the clutch, he's not he's not getting the protection he needs. And, like, just let's juxtapose this to Winnipeg's final drive. Not the one where Matt Nichols kneeled three times in the game, but the one where they ate up 5 minutes of clock. They got the ball with six-something minutes left. They ate up over 5 minutes of clock. They kick a field goal to extend the lead from 3-6. So Ticats get a big kickoff return on the ensuing kickoff. They get to about midfield. That's a you're playing differently if that's a three-point game as opposed to a six-point game, right? Like, maybe you might even be trying to play for overtime. You never know. But, man, I took some heat. I was tweeting from our show account for the game because that's what I do when there's road games and I have the opportunity to do it. Man, people really, I'm sure you saw it, did not like that I took Mike Daly to task for Daniel Peterman absolutely making him look foolish using, like, he flew in late for the game because he with his wife or his baby. And, like, I'm understanding of all that. But at the same time, it's like, if he's not up, if he can't play, if his head's not in it, he shouldn't be on the field.
No, definitely not.
I
got angry
with
someone because.
Say it, dude. Say it. Don't hate yourself. Well, that's what we have the show for.
It's ridiculous. I mean, okay, like, the birth of a child, I don't have kids, but I'm assuming that the birth of a child is an awesome thing in your life. Like, if he's too overjoyed with his life to not perform on the football field, then don't play, dude. Like, don't play. We have Courtney Steven. He's just as good as you, okay? He can be on the field. In my opinion, he probably would have made that tackle. Mike Daly was completely flat-footed on that play, and he just got, you know, easily to run around.
He got absolutely schooled.
So that is not a valid excuse in my mind, okay? If you can't play because you're so happy you had a child, then don't play.
Like, if he makes that tackle too, maybe I think the Bombers are still in field goal range, so it's still a six-point game, but the Cats get the ball with, like,
two minutes
left as opposed to 80 seconds. Like, that's a couple more plays. Like, it's, I just – I – look, if you're on the field, I think you're open to praise and criticism. If Mike Daly makes that tackle, the tweet is, what a great tackle by Mike Daly. You know what I mean? Like, we're Mike Daly fans. We've been talking about Mike Daly on the show, I think, since almost the beginning. He's had a spot start for Courtney Steven got hurt, and they moved Craig Butler up to Sam, and Daly started at safety, and we were like – loving Mike. He had to get an interception that game. I remember the game against Edmonton. I think he had two picks against Edmonton in a game a few years. I think it was the first game you were in Edmonton to watch. Like, we are Mike Daly fans, but at the same time, if any, we're fans of a lot of guys in this team, pretty much all of them, if I'm being honest. Like, I don't think this is not a team where we're like, we don't like certain, like, player X. We're fans of the team. We're fans of the guys in this team. They make mistakes. We have, like, it's kind of our duty, if not our job, to point it out. And on that, whether Mike Daly had a kid or not, he got beat badly by the receiver, and you got to call it out when it happens. Like, and even if it's a guy you like, it's, there's nothing you can do. Like, he made a bad play and it hurt this team. And if he's on the field, he's open to criticism.
It was like, he wasn't aggressive enough on that tackle. He just kind of stopped and let the guy just, he made Daly look slow and stupid on that play. Like, so yeah, that, to me, that's not a valid excuse. I understand there's a human element to life. I know that. Like, obviously, having a kid is more important than playing football. But like I said many times, if he wasn't feeling it, if he didn't feel like he was up to play, then he shouldn't have been playing.
And if you want me to be fair about this, I was watching the highlights of the game to cut up this for the plays out for our theme song for the week. And there was one where Andrew Harris catches a pass of the backfield, and the same thing happens to Larry Dean. Larry Dean is an all-star caliber player, and he got beat badly on that play. Harris picks up like 25, 30 yards on a catch and run. So it happens to all players. It's the Dean one happened in the middle of the game, where the Daly one happens at the end. It's a bigger deal when it happens late in the game. If Jeremiah Mazzoli throws a first quarter interception and he throws four touchdowns the rest of the game and doesn't throw another pick and the Ticats win, we're not talking about the pick. But if the Ticats lose a game by six and he throws an interception on the last play of the game in the end zone when they're on the 15-yard line, we're talking about it's context, it's timing. That's what makes a difference. That's why Mike Daly got called out, and we didn't really call in any other players on it.
Yeah, the timing of it was – it magnifies the play big time, for sure.
Absolutely. Same with the procedure calls. How many procedure calls were in this game? Probably don't even know the number, but the two that happened on the final drive were killers, and that's why we talk about them.
Yeah, and it might have been probably had something to do with the noise at Investors Group Field. I mean, they were
pretty loud.
They were really bringing it that game, especially on that last drive. But it's just really bad timing. I mean, you have a chance to win, and you take these stupid penalties and. I heard they were working on the, you know, discipline in practice this week. Hopefully it pays off.
Okay, so we've talked about the offensive line. We've talked about the penalties. We've touched on Avery Jordan. We've talked about the fumbles. We've talked about a lot of negatives of this. Peek behind the curtain. Mike and I tend to go back and forth on what we like and dislike about the game. This week, we're very similar in what we like. So let's start with the big one that we both liked in this one, Mike. Let's talk about Speedy B, because, man, was he awesome in this one.
He was making plays out there, man. I mean, Jalen Saunders went down. It seems like he's the go-to guy in this offense this season so far. But Banks stepped up. That touchdown catch was beautiful. He's playing his heart out. He's a talented dude, and he really showed it this game. I mean, I just see the numbers here. Bop, beep, bop, beep, yeah, six catches, 106 yards, 17.7-yard average, and a touchdown. So, kid balled out. He was like well ahead of everyone else. Chris Williams was the closest, and he only had three catches for 44 yards. So Brandon Banks was head and shoulders above all the receivers on this team this game.
And he was making tough catches. Like, there was an over-the-shoulder when he made down the sideline on their opening drive. There's the touchdown catch when he jumped and caught it in between two defenders, got smoked, held onto the ball and scored a touchdown. There's one on a later drive. I think it was the last touchdown drive the team had, where Mazzoli throws it while he's getting hit. And finds Banks near the sidelines. He tippy-toed. Like, he was not just making catches and making plays. He was making the tough catches. And, like, it's cliche. It's probably overstated, but we've probably said it too many times ourselves. But, man, he's not a returner anymore, man. This dude is a full-fledged receiver, and he's got, like, over 700 yards receiving after 8 games. Like, he is just tearing it up. And I thought he was the best player on the field. maybe with the exception of Adam Bickhill, for both teams in this game, he was phenomenal.
Yeah, it was a joy to watch. He's been outstanding the whole season, really. I mean, him and Jalen Saunders have been going back and forth for leading receivers in each game. But, you know, one thing that I didn't like, if we got to jump back, is Luke Tasker's not involved enough in this offense right now. I mean, one catch for 18 yards, and the catch that he did make was phenomenal. I mean, I didn't think he was going to make that catch, and he turns it upfield for a nice game. But, man, I'm missing my Luke Tasker out there.
Yeah, you got to wonder if maybe he's – not he's working his way back from the injury, but maybe Mazzoli, because he was out for a little while, is now more comfortable with some of the other guys. It is weird to see Tasker kind of not a focal point of the offense. I do wonder if sometimes, and maybe we should look back on this, maybe come back to it late, like at another day, but maybe if the running game's working, Tasker's not as, because Tasker's the short, you know, he's the midfield guy. He's a short guy. He's the, you need 7 yards, he gets you eight sort of thing. But the run game really worked in this. And that's something you wanted to talk about, too. You want to talk about the balanced attack. Like, this wasn't Mazzoli throwing the ball for 500 yards and there being seven carries on a team total for 12 yards. Like, they ran the ball well. They threw the ball. Like, it was a very balanced attack.
Yep. Looking at the numbers here, 24 passing – or 27 passing attempts, 24 rushing attempts. I mean, we talked about it before. It's not going to be 50-50, but that's pretty damn close to 50-50 right there.
And that's back-to-back week where it's pretty damn close. That's surprising.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, 24 attempts, 139 yards, almost a 6-yard average, 2 touchdowns on the ground. Alex Green has a nose for the end zone. Like, if you're a yard or two away, he's going to plow his way in there. That's one of the things I really like about this kid. And Mazzoli ran the – Mazzoli was the leading rusher in this game, I believe. Yeah. Yeah, he had 80 yards, 7 carries for 80 yards, a long of 36 yards. I don't necessarily want to see him running that much, but if the opportunity's there, I mean, you got to take it, right?
And they made good use of it, too. Like, he had some really long runs, like the one on the last touchdown drive. He almost scored himself. Like, he found, they did the read option, he found the hole, and he was gone. And it was like, just by like the shoestrings, like barely tackled at like the 1.5 yard line, like, when the team – look, and they didn't win the game, but the game was close, and the team – and it wasn't close for a lot of it either, but they kept running the football. They didn't just go into, we got to throw it every down. And maybe this is like – to kind of go back to the Luke Tasker thing, maybe because the running game is working so well, Tasker's role in the offense is a little bit diminished. Like, does that – I don't know. Like, I'm not saying that's the case,
could
but
be.
I could see why they're picking up all the yards on the ground. They don't need to use the guy in short yardage. I don't know. It's me freestyling off the top of my dome right now.
Yeah, that could be. And it, like, it doesn't matter to me. Like, if we win the game and we rush the ball and Luke Tasker doesn't have any catches, I don't care. But it's just kind of strange
it
that
is.
He was.
Yeah,
he's such a talented guy. He used to be such a focal point of this offense. And, you know, there's so much talent receivers-wise on this team. They're probably going to take turns. Like, maybe next game, Tasker will have, you know, 100 yards or something. So, you know, I'm fine with it. We just gotta get those W's, man. We're 3-5. We got to start winning some games here.
Yeah, I want to talk about one other thing I liked about this game, and then I want you to talk about the Hicks screens, because that's something that was bugging you throughout this game. But I want the one thing, because we talk about it a lot, red zone execution. They were perfect 3-for-3 in this game. It's one of those things that we've been critical about over the season, but in the last two games, Ticats have been in the red zone 8 times. 7 of those trips have resulted in touchdowns. 1 was a field goal, so all 8 trips have led to points. That's something we weren't seeing a few weeks ago, where they would get in the red zone and they were 0-2, they were 0-3, they were 1-4. They're scoring in the red zone. That's a good sign. That tells me that the team is executing. They're when they're in the money situations, they're making it count. Again, they lost the game, and we're not trying to take that away from it, but to see the team execute in the red zone was a big plus for me.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, that moving forward, it's definitely a good sign. I mean, if we can eliminate these penalties and these, you know, some of the turnovers. I know you're not going to be perfect on penalties or turnovers, but if we can, you know, shrink those a little bit or a big bit, it would be, and we have the execution in the red zone. I mean, we're going to win some games if we can do that.
All right, let's talk about the Hicks screen, man, because when we were prepping for this, this seemed to really stick in your craw, and I want to hear you just rant about it on the live mic.
It's not working. We don't have the We don't have the receivers, and I know that I believe one of the offensive linemen, maybe the left or right tackle, pops out and blocks as well in that play. But the receivers, they're just not good blocking receivers. There was one play where it was a hit screen, and Mike Jones absolutely got destroyed by a defensive back, just ran right through him, made the tackle. You know, these guys aren't big enough to make these – to make these blocks for Brandon Banks or Jalen Saunders or whoever has the ball. So they just keep trying it and trying it, trying it. It's not working. They need to maybe switch it up, maybe throw some screens to the running back, maybe switch up, you know, a tight end screen or something. But these hit screens, man, I think we need to give up on them for a little bit, or at least until we can get someone in there that can block.
Yeah, it's frustrating. Watching it, you see things like this, you wonder, oh, maybe they're setting something up, maybe they're setting something up, and then it never sets anything up, and they just keep going back to it, and you're like, what are they doing? Like, are they playing the long game here where they're setting something up for later in the season? Because these plays seem to be getting nothing. Like, my dad hates these plays. Even when they're successful, he's like, man, I know that worked, but I hate that play. He hates it at every level of football in every football league. When he sees it, I feel like he's going to pick up a chair and throw it through the television. Absolutely cannot stand the hit screens. And to see the Ticats do it and to do it so poorly all the time, it's like you want to just go to June Jones. I know it's a staple of your offense. Get it the hell out of there. It's not doing anyone any good.
Or at least take a break from it for a while. Like, switch it up a little bit. I mean, yeah, I'm with him on that. They're not atop of my hate list. You know, my shotgun handoff.
Third one from the gun. Like,
yeah, that's the top of the list, but it's slowly creeping up there, man. It's slowly creeping up. It's probably number two right now in my hate list.
Mike's hate list. That'll make for a fun off-season show. It's like, Mike, we got nothing to talk about. Why don't we dig through your hate list? Because Mike, I've heard you
comic book movies.
Shut the hell up.
Hit screens.
Oh my God.
I like Johnny Cash, but anyways, go ahead.
You better like, look, I don't care if you don't like Hurt as much as you like the Nine Inch Nails version. You say you don't like Johnny Cash. We are fighting.
I don't like country music, but I like the older style country music, like the Cash and stuff like that.
The man in black transcends country. He's just he was just a talent. Anyway, speaking of talent, we put out on the Twitter machine, we said, who's your player of the game? You and I discussed who our player was. The game was. It was overwhelming. For us, it was unanimous. Mike, who's this week's Podsky Player of the Week?
This week's Podsky Player of the Week is Brandon Banks. He had 6 receptions, 106 yards, 17.7 yard average, a long of 37, and a beautiful touchdown catch, along with many other beautiful catches in this game. So for the first time in Podsky history, Brandon Banks gets the player of the week.
Well deserved. 6 of his 7 games, or is it 7 of 8? I can't remember what it was, or maybe it's 6 of the last. Anyway, he's been over 100 yards in more games than he hasn't been this year. I wish I wouldn't have screwed that up. But anyway, beast in this game, beast so far this season. Looking forward to seeing what he can do this week against Edmonton, but definitely a very well-deserving Podsky Player of the Week. Let's talk some Ticats news, Mike, and there isn't a lot here, but the team did sign a pair of American defensive backs. They inked Robert Porter Jr., who was with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers a season ago for a few games, and they brought in former BC Lion and former Ottawa Red Black and former NFLer Josh Johnson. And Johnson was a major pickup for the Red Blacks in the offseason with Luchez Purifoy, thinking of a way to revamp that secondary, which had been a little beat up and hadn't performed as well as it had during their two Grey Cup seasons, one where they lost and one where they won. And Johnson was cut by the Red Blacks. Purifoy was cut by the Red Blacks, so they didn't work there. But Josh Johnson's got a pedigree behind him and could be a guy who's got some Sam experience, could be someone that could be a pretty interesting pickup for this defense. And if he's a guy that can play man-to-man coverage, Jerry Glanville's going to love him.
I was just going to say that. Can he play man-to-man? Because I was listening to an interview a couple weeks ago with Glanville. It was on the Rich Eisen show or something. I didn't really like Rich Eisen, how he interviewed him, but that's a different story. Did you listen to that?
I did not. What did Eisen say that you didn't like?
He was like, Jerry, why are you coaching in Canada? Like, what's wrong? It's like he felt sorry for him. Like, he just like a pity party. Like, oh, poor Jerry. Like, are you ever going to go back to the NFL, Jerry? Like, I don't know. It just bugged me. I didn't appreciate the way he interviewed him. I know that you know, I don't talk to him, but I know that Glanville is very happy to be a coach in the CFL with the Tiger Cats. So I just thought he was a little bit of a pity party in that interview. But he did mention that they didn't play it. They played the whole game. It was man-to-man against Montreal because it was right after the Manziel game that they played against Montreal. But they didn't play a snap of zone. So, yeah, Josh Johnson, I'm hoping he can play man because that's the majority of this defense is man-to-man and blitzes, right?
Yeah, which is no surprise if you know Gary Glanville from his years of coaching in the NFL and elsewhere. You know what? To kind of go back to that Rich Eisen thing, you know what's weird about that is he feels sorry for him coaching in the CFL, but would he have said the same if he was coaching when he was coaching 10 years ago in some, like, Division III school? Like, isn't that sort of like, Jerry, don't you feel bad that you're coaching at some no-name school? Like, he's coaching in the second biggest professional football league in the world. Like,
He was coaching at Portland State.
Yeah, I don't even know where that is. Is that Portland in Maine? Is that Portland in Oregon? I don't even know who that is.
I don't know. But, and like, I think he was at a high school or something before he came. Like, it's not even listed on Wikipedia. The last thing they have is, not that Wikipedia is like a great place for knowledge, but the last place they had was Portland State in 2010, 2011. So, I mean, they have great facilities in Hamilton. You know, it's the second best pro football league in the world. There's no reason to feel sorry for Jerry Glanville. They mentioned that they took a train from Hamilton to Montreal, and that was like a thing for, like, why aren't you taking a plane? Like, what is this league, you know? I was like, whatever. Shut up.
It's not that far. That's what, like...
Oh, I know. That's it, yeah.
And
train is a beautiful way to travel, okay?
If the Philadelphia Eagles play the New York Giants, I don't think they fly to New York.
No. No, you should watch it. You should watch it, and maybe I got the wrong feel for it, but watch it and let me know what you think. You can find it on YouTube.
All right, so I will watch the Rich Eisen show. You will watch Creed, and then we'll come back here and we'll bitch about both while we hate both.
Oh, that's like 10 that's 10 minutes compared to like 2.5 hours, whatever.
Hey,
I guess we can do that.
I said I watched Creed with you. It's a good movie. I'm glad to watch it again. Okay, enough. Okay, we get sidetracked. Stupid stuff too much here. Let's talk CFL news, because the one big thing that we did miss by not having a show last week was the RKO out of nowhere that was Daron Carter's release from the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. I'm sure you were the same as I was, watching the Alouettes Red Blacks game, where Johnny Manziel looked pretty good, if I do say so myself. Montreal nearly won that game until Manziel got knocked out. All of a sudden, my Twitter blows up. Daron Carter's talking about peace out, Saskatchewan. Then, like, minutes later, the Riders send out a email or tweet or whatever saying, we've released Daron Carter. And it's like, where did this come from? I was stunned. What were you? Were you shocked to see this news?
I was floored. I was at a friend's house. We were watching the game with the sound off and music playing, so I heard no talk. I wasn't really on Twitter that much during the night, and then I just saw it. Literally the game just ended. They were turning to something else, like, I forget, it was like a video game or something. But I just saw breaking news: Daron Carter gets released. I lost my mind, and no one heard of. They're like, who's that? And like, never mind, it doesn't matter. It's just like, I can't believe that this has happened. Like, you know, all the stuff that he's been through, like, done, you know, all the pot charges, the trouble in the locker room, all that stuff. And then it seems like out of nowhere, he's just gone. I don't know if something happened in particular or Chris Jones said, you know what, this guy isn't good for our team anymore. We need to get rid of him. We need to set an example that you have to be a team guy if you're going to be on the Rough Riders or whatever. But it's a shocking move, to say the least. I mean, one of the best talents in the league, receiver-wise, and, you know, he's durable. I mean, he's not a top-end defensive back or anything, but he can play that position. So, he must have been some kind of trouble in the locker room to let him go like that.
You know what I don't understand about this? Because a lot of people – look, it's the Riders, so a lot of people are talking about it. It's Daron Carter, so a lot of people are talking about it. It's Chris Jones, so a lot of people are talking about it. I'm not here to take sides. I don't think you're here to take sides. The one thing I will not take issue with, you mentioned being a team guy. How much more of a team guy could he really have been? Hey, man, we need you to play defensive back. Okay, cool. Hey, man, we're putting you back a receiver. Okay, cool. He complained in the media about not getting the ball, which I'm maybe my math wrong here, but 100% of professional receivers and college receivers and high school receivers and receivers who, of guys who play in little league football, they want the ball. And when they don't get the ball, they complain about it. His dad complained about not getting the ball. Jerry Rice, the greatest of all time, complained when he didn't get the football. Receivers complain about not getting the football. But he did pretty much everything the Riders asked him to do. So the idea that he's not like a team, maybe he's not the best dude in the locker room. Maybe he's, but he seems like one of those guys who it's like, maybe, I'm sure you have, you work in a pretty big building, I presume. There's guys at work, girls at work you don't like, but you get along with them because it's like, okay, like whatever, they're here. I'm the same way. There are people at work I don't like. There are people at work I adore. And it's like people you put up with them because that's what you do. I imagine Daron Carr is one of those guys that not everyone loves, probably rubs people the wrong way, a bit of aloof in his attitude. But the dude produces on the field. And if, again, never been in a professional locker room. I've only been in the highest level I played was high school football. But if a dude could help us win football games, but he was a jerk, I was okay with it because he was helping us win football games. You know what I mean? Like, Daron Carter made the Riders better, and I know Saskatchewan went out and absolutely beat the brakes off the Stampeders on Sunday, and everyone's using that as, oh, look what the Riders did as soon as they let go of Carter. That's an idiotic comparison. That game with Carter not there has nothing to do with one another. Carter being there, Carter not being there, the way the Riders played, they were going to whoop the Stamps out.
Yeah, they would have. Maybe they would have won by more if Carter was there.
Exactly. You know, to bring field, a correlation between those two, to me, is completely idiotic. And
yeah, it's like, Carter's gone, now we can play good.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, it's like saying, they played the game on a Sunday, and so that's why they won. So every game should be on a Sunday because they don't, like, right. Come on. No, let's not correlate those two. It's ridiculous. But let's talk about what his next move could be. As soon as he was released, within a day, there was talk of four teams being interested in him. The Lions, the Owls, the Argos, and the Tiger Cats. BC and Montreal took themselves out of the running fairly soon. Carter was in Montreal and I think met with them and they said, we're not signing up this time. Toronto has apparently taken themselves out of the running, which makes sense. Again, to give a peek behind the curtain, you and I discussed this before the show and you said rather succinctly, doesn't seem like a Mark Trestman guy. Completely agree with you. That leaves one team that expressed interest in him that he hasn't either signed with or that hasn't taken themselves out of the running, and that is our Tiger Cats. Now, when Carter was released, I put a poll up on the Podski Wee Wee Twitter account, and I said, would you welcome Daron Carter with open arms if the Tiger Cats signed him? Pretty even split here, Mike. 49% said yes, 28% said no, and 23% told us to stop eating Daron's weed-laced cookies. So where do you stand on this, pal? Do you think he could land with the black and gold? And if he did, would you welcome him with a nice warm Mike embrace?
There was four teams involved when we first started this whole sweepstakes, right, Josh? I mean, now that BC and Montreal are out of the equation, I thought I saw somewhere Toronto was out too, but I could be wrong about that. But even if Toronto and Hamilton are the only teams left now, you look at the personalities of the coaches. You got Mark Trestman in Toronto, who runs a very tight ship. And that's like the opposite to what we have in Hamilton with June Jones. Not that June Jones can't be serious when he has to, but it's more of a laid-back environment. You know, Jerry Glanville and June Jones are pretty fun dudes. So you listen to them talk, and they're interesting dudes. They're fun dudes. They have good stories. You know, Orlando Steinhauer seems like a fun guy too. So if I had to bet, I'd say that Hamilton is probably the most likely landing spot for Daron Carter. And if he lands in Hamilton, I'll welcome him with open arms. You have to. I mean, he's part of the team now. Let's just hope that he can, you know, not be problems in the locker room. And, you know, we got players that are kind of like his personality in the locker room as well. You know, Simone Lawrence, I'm not comparing them, but they both like to talk. They both like to have fun. Maybe he could be a good blend on this Hamilton team. You never know.
I'm going to be perfectly honest, man. I like Daron Carter. I liked him when he was in Montreal. I think he's a hell of a talent. I think he doesn't take himself too seriously, and I like that in people in general. I especially like it in football players. He performs when he's on the field. So to me, him coming here, I'd have no issues with it whatsoever. My only question is, where does he fit in? This team That's just it.
Yeah.
This team already has Brandon Banks, Jalen Saunders, Luke Tasker, Terrence Tolliver, and they just added Chris Williams. So if you're bringing in Daron Carter, one of those guys is going. You're not releasing the two guys who are over 700 yards in receiving. Daron Carter is not a down-the-middle possession receiver, so you're not releasing Luke Tasker or trading Luke Tasker. They just got Chris Williams, so I can't imagine they're too keen on letting him go. That leaves one man out, and man, I don't know if I would like to see the tornado of crap that would come if the Ticats signed Daron Carter and, to make room for him, released Terrence Tolliver or traded Terrence Tolliver, because he was a guy hurt last year, fan favorite, been a fan favorite for a few years. Man, the vitriol on Ticats Twitter would be immense.
It really would be. We know how passionate the Ticat fan base is.
You remember when Vernon Adams got released? I thought people were going to burn down the stadium. And he was a third-string quarterback.
Yeah, people get too attached to some of these players. But that's their prerogative. They do what they want.
Sure.
But, like, yeah, I mean, the overreactions of Ticat fans sometimes is comical. But
it is fun. And you know what? Like, you're a fan how you're a fan. If that's how you identify with the team, I'm not going to crap on it. But, like,
no.
Oh, man, if Terrence Tolliver gets released and Daron Carter comes in, there are going to be a lot of people who are going to be very happy.
But the old saying is, like, when Daron Carter was in Montreal, we just beat them. We just beat them every time in the playoffs, it seemed. If you can't beat them, join them, right? So, I can't really see it happening because it's not a need. You know, we don't really need more receivers, right? We just talked about it, but you never know. You never know, you know. June Jones loves the talented receivers. So, you know, if he comes in, he comes in, and he'll contribute, and I'm sure he'll be a great player for us. But if he doesn't, then it's I'm not too worried about that either.
Look, man, you said Montreal's out. Montreal's only out until they're not anymore. And they keep losing ball games, and they need talent on that team. They'll bring in Daron Carter. Like, I think he wants to play in Montreal. I think that's where he's comfortable playing because that's where he was before. And, look, Winnipeg, to me, is a team that could probably use him. I know when he was a free agent last time, there was talk of maybe the Bombers bringing him in because he adds a dimension to an offense, especially in Winnipeg, that I think they're lacking. Weston Dressler's hurt. They don't have – this is no disrespect to Darvin Adams, who I think is a very, very talented receiver. They don't have that one elite receiver where you go, we got a game plan for him. You can take away Darvin Adams. Delvin Breaux took away Darvin Adams a few weeks ago when they played here in Hamilton, and I think Adams had one catch on the evening. Like, he's a guy that he can be taken out of a game. It's hard to take Daron Carter out of a game, and if you have Daron Carter and you do try to take him out of the game, then it opens things up for guys like Darvin Adams. Then it opens things up for guys like Daniel Peterman, who I thought played really well after Dressler got hurt. It opens up things for, like, a Ken Brault. Like, I think the Bombers could be a dark horse. I know that they weren't attached to him. I know no one's talked about them signing him. I doubt they've even had any conversations with him, but it wouldn't surprise me if a team like Winnipeg kind of, well, okay, you know what? Especially they're going to be playing the back-to-back, the Labor Day and Banjo Bowl against the Riders. Nice way to kind of stoke that flame. I could see him landing there. With Hamilton, to me, it's just a matter of they don't need him. You know what I mean? They just they don't need him. If he comes, great. I'll embrace him like I do every player who signs here. Hey, we embrace Chad Owens, for crying out loud. We can embrace Daron Carter. I honestly don't see it happening.
But I was thinking about it, like, could you imagine if Daron Carter had, you know, if he played with a confident quarterback for once? I mean, I know he played with Kevin Glenn in Saskatchewan. That was, like, at the tail end of his career. He played in Montreal with, like, Troy Smith and Jonathan Crompton and all these garbage quarterbacks. Could you imagine if he had a good quarterback giving him the ball? Like, this guy would be off the charts with the yards and with the touchdowns and with everything. Like, you know, I just think he needs the opportunity to play with a really good quarterback.
Yeah, I guess now that you mention it, he never really played one. He had, what, a couple games with Zach Caleros this year? And yeah, you're right.
He wasn't at the top of his game. You know, Zach looked really good last game, but earlier in the season, you know, he wasn't playing that well. So
no, and the Riders' offense is, look, all due respect to what they did against Calgary, but for the most part, their offense has been crap. Like, it's been
awful
to watch. Yeah, all those years in Montreal, never really had much of a quarterback. Yes, he played with Kevin Glenn, but he also had to play with Brandon Bridge. And yeah, I guess you're kind of right. He's never really played with a competent quarterback. It would be kind of neat to see what he could do with, say, Jeremiah Mazzoli, or heck, it's never going to happen. But he went to Edmonton or Calgary, played one of those. Like, man, that'd be we would see the talent matched in numbers finally. Because, like, the fact he's put up 1,000-yard seasons with guys like you and me throwing him the football should tell you how good he actually is.
Exactly.
All right, Mike, let's cap things off with how we always do. Let's talk about the upcoming game. The bye week not kind to our Ticats. Both the Red Blacks and Argos won, and now Hamilton is tied in second place with the dirty, stinky, filthy Argos. Second in the East, it sucks. I hate it.
So yeah, and they look good, didn't they? I mean, Ottawa's looking good. Toronto's starting to get
on. Ottawa is looking really good. Toronto's looking they're not a poop show anymore. I don't want to curse. I'm trying not to curse, but
yeah.
Looks like maybe the switch to McLeod Bethel Thompson's made the Argos a little better. Red Blacks do look pretty darn good. I'll have to swallow that. I gotta hate saying that. Anyway. Our black and gold get back at it on Thursday at Tim Hortons Field against Edmonton. They enter the game, Edmonton that is. Winners of four of their last five and sit second in the West, 6-3. These two teams played back in week two in Edmonton with our Ticats winning in dominating fashion, 38-21. So this week, Mike's taking why we'll win. I'm taking why they'll lose. So, Mike, I'm going to throw it to you, and I'm going to say, why do you think the Ticats will complete the season sweep of the Eskimos in this one?
Well, we were talking about for the show, we couldn't remember. Well, I think we decided that Mazzoli hadn't played the Esks at home
before.
But when he plays them in Commonwealth, he had that set that record for straight completions in a game a couple years ago. This year, he came in had a really good game. The Ticats played really well overall. So I'm going to say reasons they will win. One of the reasons will be Mazzoli plays well against the Eskimos. I don't know why. But maybe it's because he used to be on that team. I'm sure there's no really hard feelings because he was only there and he was like the four-string quarterback for not that long of a time. But he just has good games against the Eskimos. Another reason is I've read that they've been working on the discipline, working on bringing down those penalties. Let's not have 100-plus yards in penalties. I think they're going to do that. They're going to bring them down. That's not going to be as much of a factor in this game. And to get Delvin Bro back in the secondary is going to help a lot to shut down these top-notch Eskimos receivers, Darrell Walker, Duke Williams. All those guys can really play ball. So to get Bro back to shut down at least one of those guys would be a big thing for them.
All right, I can't really disagree with any of that, and I'm going to go with why we're going to lose this game, and it's kind of generic and maybe a little bit lame. I mentioned the sweep. Ticats have not swept Edmonton in the season series since 06, and 98 was the last time they swept them when the second game was in Hamilton. I know that's a very specific stat, but yeah, the last time they went into Edmonton and won and then won in Hamilton was 98. The last time they swept them at all was 06. Man, that was a long time ago. I honestly think, much like the Winnipeg game a couple weeks ago, that these teams match up fairly evenly. Like, I think that this is two pretty good offenses. I think Hamilton's defense is better. I think Edmonton's special teams is better. So I think you take the three units, you put them together, I think it's a wash. I think these teams are very evenly matched. And it's just that simply the Ticats do not beat Edmonton twice in one regular season. It doesn't happen. I like all the things you said, but it's just history is not on our side in this one, buddy. And the second one is the record at home. I don't know what it is, but for some reason the Ticats are allergic to winning at Tim Hortons Field. They're 1-2 at home this year. They're 3-6 at home under June Jones. And since they started off with that very impressive 10-game winning streak at Tim Hortons Field, they are 9-19 since then in the quote unquote friendly confines of their home stadium. I don't know what it is, man, but they don't sweep the Eskimos. They can't win at home to save their lives. Those are the two reasons why I think they're going to drop this one. But I think it's going to be a close game. And, Mike, I hope, like I do every week when we switch this up, I hope the side of why we'll win is the correct one.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe they should shouldn't have completed the stadium because it seems like they were playing well in like half-built stadium. Yes. So yeah, I hope I'm right on this one, bud, because I don't want to go into the Labor Day game.
3-6.
That's not good.
It's better than
0-8 or whatever, but still not that good.
No, not where I thought they'd be. I thought at worst we'd be going into Labor Day in the rematch with at worst a chance to get above 500 because I knew it was going to be an odd number of games. Thinking 6 wins in the first 11 games was, to me, the absolute worst that this team should accomplish. They've got to win out from now until the Labor Day rematch to get that. God, I hope they do because I am really – look, they're in the East Division, so it doesn't matter. They win those two games against the Argos. After, even if they lose this one, they're going to be well in control of second place. But I want first place in the East. I want 10 play. I'm turning it to you, man. I want over 500 record. I want first place in the East. I want consistently good football from this team. I'm turning it to Mike. Next thing you know, I'm going to say, hey, comic book movies.
You suck. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, I mean, that. Are we asking too much to give like 10 wins? Come on, like 10, 11 wins?
I know.
Exhausting.
I don't feel like we're not sitting here going, we want to win 10 straight Grey Cups. We're not sitting here going, we want to go undefeated in the regular season. Just give us 500 and like 500 football every now and then's fine. Give us above 500 football on more than like twice in the last like 15 years. Like we just want to see wins, man. I know that this Ticats team has talent. I know we're not the worst team in the league. Thanks, Montreal, but it's still so depressing to look at the record and go, man, under 500 again.
Well, that's why it's so depressing. That's why it's so frustrating, is that we know that we have the talent on this team. We know that our coaches are good coaches. We know that the general manager brings in good talent. It's like we just have to fit the pieces together and start piling up some wins, because it's not early anymore, right? I mean, we're almost at Labor Day.
Dude, it's mid-season.
Yeah, so let's get on the trolley and, you know, let's get it going, boys.
Yeah, let's get a good second half going. Let's get some wins, starting with this Thursday at Tim Hortons Field against Edmonton. Let's get a win there, and then we'll roll from there. Right, Mike?
Yep, I'm down for that, too. Get the win against Edmonton, and then we'll get two against Toronto. Wouldn't that be sweet?
That would be the best. So that was Podski Wee Wee for this week. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CFPod Network on Twitter.